Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Hello and welcome to Zed Games, Australia's favourite gaming radio show. Who will play for all this cash? And here's our host, Major Lee.
Thank you, Razor, host of 4ZZZ.
Not a problem.
Zed Games.
We're also joined by Alana.
Hi.
Who has returned.
Why does everyone but me get cool titles? Can I be like Lieutenant Alana? He was Major Lee.
Yeah.
You want to be Lieutenant Alana?
Can I be like Chief?
Chief.
Yeah, Chief
like
Alana.
That.
Yep, good. I rule all of the other Alanas.
Yeah.
So this week we got a pretty sweet show for you guys. We have an interview with John Day, who is the producer of Disney Infinity 2.0, which is coming out in September. That's courtesy of Ben from 2RRR. Alana, you have just returned from Germany from Gamescom.
I have. Still fairly jet-lagged. It was like 20 hours of flying.
But you did get to play a whole bunch of unreleased games,
yeah? I did. I got Dying Light, Sunset Overdrive, Ori and the Blind Forest, Forza Horizon 2, Evolve, Sims 4. Lots of games.
Cool.
Lots
well, we games. Might like pick four of those.
Yeah, maybe not all of them.
Yeah.
It's too many.
Also excited to announce the prizes that we'll be giving away for Radiothon next week. We have a sweet bunch of loot, so we'll be telling you guys what you can win if you choose Zed Games as your favorite show when you subscribe. But first, let's kick this episode off with the Week in Gaming News headlines. Who's going to read them out this week, guys?
Let's alternate,
okay.
Shall we?
All right.
Nintendo has confirmed that an iPad version of the Pokemon Trading Card game is in development. This release will mark the first game that Nintendo will publish on iOS. The game is scheduled for release later this year.
Money just started pouring out of like every open
it's
container.
Very interesting, though, because Nintendo are so often predictable.
Yeah.
Like, everything they do is very obvious, and this is the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if they released a Pokemon game on PC.
Yeah, that would be nuts.
Right?
Yeah.
But they never do it, but you're like, but don't you want money? I don't understand. And they're like, no, we're fine. We're fine. We don't want money.
Yeah, apparently as soon as there was even the whisper that Nintendo were doing something mobile, their stock price just bounced right up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all
it took. By that. Because they do have the best exclusives. They totally do.
Yeah. Yes. Moving on. Obsidian, the developer behind Fallout New Vegas and South Park, The Stick of Truth, has made a deal with Paizo to make the games based on their tabletop RPG Pathfinder. The first game will be an adaptation of the Pathfinder adventure card game for tablet devices. That's really exciting news.
I didn't actually know that Obsidian also made South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Yeah, that was them.
Both of those games are extremely buggy.
Yes.
Sorry, Pathfinder.
Yeah, no, that's Obsidian.
I mean, I loved South Park Stick of Truth, and I was okay with Fallout New Vegas, so I preferred Fallout 3, but both of them are extremely buggy.
Yeah, that's Obsidian's deal.
Yeah.
All of their RPGs are amazingly well-written and designed, and then just not tested enough.
Funny, though, because that's kind of the same as Bethesda, except that if it's Bethesda, nobody cares. They're like, Skyrim, 10 out of 10. I'm like, did you miss that part where there's a glitch everywhere?
Yeah. Also, not so much with the writing, just with the design.
Yeah, no, the writing's not so great. But
yes.
I didn't think Fallout New Vegas was that excellent.
Fallout New Vegas is that excellent.
Is it?
Yeah. It really is. You should go back.
Maybe I will one day.
Yeah, visit
I got
the
up
desert.
To a part where I made friends with a super mutant called Betty.
Yeah.
It was like a grandma.
Yeah.
She was excellent.
Yeah.
She was really good.
That's what they do.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, South Park kind of suits that too, so.
So, Pathfinder is like one of, if not the most popular fantasy tabletop RPG these days. They kind of picked up the ball when Wizards dropped it with 4th edition of D&D because they made a game that was just 3.5 edition D&D and named it Pathfinder. And so they've done well out of that, and they've not done any kind of video game thing until now. So this is really exciting that these guys who are good at making RPGs have teamed up with these other guys who are good at making RPGs to make more RPGs.
It's a good day for RPGs.
RPGception.
Yeah.
Aliens Colonial Marines publisher Sega has moved... I like how Sega is now known as Aliens Colonial Marines publisher. That's how we introduced Sega. Anyway, apparently they have moved to settle a class action lawsuit brought against the company regarding alleged false advertising. Sega has offered $1.25 million to be divided amongst players who purchased the game before the 12th of February 2013. The lawsuit states that pre-release promotional trailers fraudulently depicted the game as being better than it actually was, with several advertised features missing from the final release.
So this...
the game was trash.
Yeah, it was awful.
Unanimously trash.
Yeah.
No one's really disagreeing there, but the thing is...
They've been sued for it.
Yeah, well, what's in contention is the fact that they were fraudulently misrepresenting the game before release as a good game.
Yeah, because they were saying that they had preview trailers.
That's such a funny thing to say.
The preview trailers showed all these features that weren't in the final game.
Like what?
Just they had the same opening sequence, and then by the time they got to the final game, it looked nowhere near as nice and didn't have all these things. So the idea is that this preview trailer was actually pre-rendered entirely and a lie. And what's amazing about this is that Sega have settled so that they can say that none of this is their fault. So they're backing out of the lawsuit with the settlement. So everyone gets about, like, I think they get $2 if they're part of the class action. and then the lawyers involved get like $30,000. So that's a good industry to get into.
It's interesting though, because like there have been plenty of trailers that we've seen for games that are still in alpha.
Yeah.
And they usually just say not final product or work in progress.
Yeah.
But maybe Sega didn't do that with Colonial Marines.
Yeah. Well, Gearbox is still defending this because they were the ones who actually developed it.
Oh, they did too.
Yes.
You're right. Yeah.
And so Gearbox are actually still fighting this lawsuit, and their whole battle technique seems to be saying,
interesting,
it wasn't me, it was Ted and Fred and Joe, and all of those guys are now out of business.
I believe that Battlefield 4 also got sued.
Yeah.
For being bad.
Yes.
It's just the funniest thing. You're like, your game sucks, give us money.
Yeah.
But that was by stockholders, I think, with Battlefield 4, that they were really disappointed with all the money that they put into the game and blah, 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 whereas this is just that the game sucked.
Yes.
Did have a really good statue with the collector's edition though, yeah. So there's that.
The guys who made Killzone Shadowfall are being sued as well.
Yes,
in a class action lawsuit.
See,
because their game's not.
I didn't think that was bad. It's just that not many people really cared about it. But it's not fundamentally bad.
It's because they said it was going to be 1080p,
and it's not.
And it's not.
Okay, that's an issue.
Yeah. So,
So the same thing is happening here. It's not just like this game is terrible
they actually said it was going to be better than it was.
Well, they showed it as being this thing.
But isn't that like entirely what marketing is anyway? It's just like crap to make your game look better than it is. Like I should sue Watch Dogs.
Yes, but there are laws in place to ensure that you can't just like that's what marketing also is.
Watch Dogs looked really good but isn't.
There's a very thin line between marketing and fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you cross the line.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Aliens Colonial Marines apparently did.
An update to Surgeon Simulator released this week allows players to perform eye and teeth implants. The Anniversary Edition DLC is available on Steam right now. PS4 players will soon get to join in on the fun with a release this week that includes all of the DLC.
Isn't this Australian made? I believe Surgeon Simulator was made in Australia.
Really?
I think so.
I didn't think so.
Why don't we know that?
Let's Google it.
Yeah. I like Surgeon Simulator. It's awful. It's so much fun.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, and
I think it'd be a lot of fun on consoles.
Yeah, the PS4 has it. I have no idea how it works. I guess thumbsticks and stuff. But it's like because it's a game where you use a mouse on the PC, and the mouse controls your big floppy rubbery hand,
which is just not at all stable.
No,
you should really not have that job.
Yeah, and then you've got keys that control the fingers on that hand. So in order to like pick up anything, you've got to move this rubbery hand and then press the right keys to contract the fingers. And so when you're trying to do anything, say give someone a heart transplant, you will reach over to grab a useful tool, and instead you'll accidentally knock a glass bottle into the open cavity of the patient. And it's just in there now. Good luck.
apparently they're actually UK-based, but it was made during the Global Game Jam.
Ah.
In 2013.
And Australia is part of the globe.
I think that's why, I for a while there, I thought that Game Jam was only in Australia.
Ah, okay.
Yes. But it's not.
No, it's global.
But yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun on a on console. Mm. Be interesting to see. I always think now, like, I wonder what YouTube videos are going to be made about this. Like, there's going to be so many funny things on the internet. Yay!
That is how they sold it to me. Razor, you've got a PS4. Are you going to be surgering it up?
I think this sounds like something that's right up my alley.
Yeah?
Yeah. Especially the teeth implants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you do all have about
that,
that.
You've got that weird teeth thing.
I always wanted... Thanks, Lee. I always wanted to be a dentist.
You wanted to be a dentist?
No.
Oh, okay. I was like, what? Who wants that?
Yeah.
Except for dentists. We love you. Mm. Shout out to all our dentist listeners.
All right, that's it for this week's gaming news headlines. You are listening to Zed Games. Alrighty, at the start of the show, we heard from the Grand Theft Auto soundtrack, Grand Theft Auto 5, that is. Welcome to Los Santos, that one was called. Next up, here's a artist called Nitro Fun, and this one's called New Game.
All right, I'm here with John Day, producer of Disney Infinity 2.0. Disney Infinity, it's back again, but this time it's chock-a-block full of Marvel superheroes.
That's right.
How has this changed the gameplay experience?
Well, it's made it a lot different depending on who you play. I mean, superheroes are who they are because they have special, unique, specific powers and characteristics and histories, right? And so it's given us the challenge to create gameplay that's interesting for a wide variety of types of characters. When you play the game with Spider-Man, you're going to get a very different experience than if you play it with Iron Man or Captain America. Now, all three of those experiences are great, and we spent a lot of time making sure that they are, but they're just very varied and very different, and it makes every character feel very unique.
Was that something, as a result of feedback from the first game, to sort of try and make the characters feel a little bit separate from one another?
Yeah. I think that we as developers recognized that we wanted a little more depth out of the characters as well, but it was something that we did get from our community. We're very connected to our community and trying to give them the game that they want. So we've made the characters feel very unique, and we've also added more depth to them. They now have skill trees, and they can level up to level 20, a little higher than before, and then select new skills every time they level up to really build the character they want.
And how challenging was that? Because a lot of the characters have quite different movesets in just the way they get around the space.
Well, you know, we have very talented, capable designers at the office and who really labored to ensure that all of these different types of mechanics, whether it be flight for Iron Man or wall crawling for Spider-Man or speed running with Captain America, that all of these things have a place, they all have a use, they all have places where they work really, really well. And then it really becomes just up to the player to use the mechanics that they choose to use.
Is there anything that you've learned from the first Disney Infinity about just the way people like to interact with the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think we got plenty of positive feedback from the first game as well. We know players like to have these sort of non-linear open world play sets to let them do whatever they want, and we've continued to make more of those. We now have the Avengers, Spider-Man, and Guardians of the Galaxy play sets that all follow kind of this pattern of non-linearness. We've also added a number of new toys to the toy box to make building in the toy box easier for people, right? We had a lot of players that said, you know, we really like the promise of the toy box. We like what it offers. We love this user-generatedness. But I, as a user, want generating to be simpler and easier. And so we've created these builders and creators that let you procedurally build elaborate structures and levels and worlds within the toy box.
So someone like me who sucks at building things can quite easily create Stark Tower from scratch.
You know, frankly, somebody who sucks at it like me too. It's never been my strong suit. I've never been a particularly artistic person. But now what used to take potentially hours to create, you can now drop down in seconds in the toy box.
How deep into the Marvel Universe does this game go? What sort of places or lore will Marvel fans have an opportunity to geek over?
Well, you do have a couple of just real big recognizable landmarks. If you go play the Spider-Man playset, if you're familiar at all with the New York City skyline, you're going to see buildings and things you'll recognize. And you'll also see iconic Spider-Man stuff like the Oscorp Tower and the Daily Bugle office building, that, you know, with J. Jonah Jameson's face on there ranting about how the world would be better off without Spider-Man. And we also have some more kind of esoteric or Easter eggy style Marvel stuff. I mean, especially with some of our awards that you can display in your interior. We've got some fairly obscure stuff. We have alternative costumes for some of the characters that some of the more comic book fans are going to recognize. We really have tried to play to both kind of a casual audience and throw in a few good things for the people that are really core Marvel fans.
So for this game so far, we've got Avengers, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy, we have Spider-Man, we've got some great looking villains. It's a pretty big place, the Marvel Universe.
How much
further are you thinking of going, you know, digging into that universe?
Well, you know, I myself am a Marvel fan. You know, I loved Spider-Man and Iron Man as a kid. I would like to be able to continue to make more stuff. I don't have anything to confirm or announce or anything right now. But I hope we do in the future. It's been a lot of fun working with the characters we have had the opportunity to work with. And, there's still, like you say, a lot more to the universe. And I hope it's something we get to revisit.
Just wink twice for Wolverine.
Boy, I wish I could wink twice at you. I genuinely do not know on that one.
Marvel, they've done a great job of conquering the film. But for some reason, Marvel Games, I feel like it's been lagging behind a bit. Before this, it's pretty much Lego Marvel, and I can think of the last game where I actually got to play as Marvel characters. Is this something that you'd like to see change?
Well, I'm a huge Marvel fan, you know, and I have played many of the Marvel games, some hits, some misses, you know, that I've really, really enjoyed. I thought Marvel Ultimate Alliance was a fantastic game a few years ago. You know, I think as a developer, as I said before, I really hope I get to be the one who's involved in making the good games. I'm really, really proud of the effort we have for Infinity. I think we've done a really great job of making the characters look and feel like what you'd expect and giving you a lot of cool things you can do with them. And being able to do that with more of Marvel would be just a great opportunity.
So looking at the other Marvel games that have come before, has that helped you guys in how you wanted to portray them in this game?
Oh, I think a little bit. I think anybody in development recognizes that video games are largely an iterative process. I think we use what we know we liked before and what we know we didn't like, and we throw in some new original spins on things together with some tried and true stuff, and that's kind of what we do. Yeah, we looked at previous Marvel games, but there's plenty of things in Disney Infinity that really had to come from somewhere else. I mean, for example, in the toy box, we now have fully functional tower defense style gameplay, which, you know, really required us to look at and evolve a totally different type of gameplay. So there were some things we pulled after kind of looking at some of our favorite Marvel games, and some things that really came from other places.
You've said before that part of the inspiration for the original Disney Infinity was just seeing the way that kids interacted with their toys and made up their own games for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
With the inclusion of Marvel, I mean, that's a really broad audience. There's a lot of fans of all ages. Has that changed the way you've approached just the gameplay and you know, thinking about that audience for this game?
Well, in terms of that audience, like the playsets specifically, we've tried to make sure that those feel like an authentic universe Marvel experience. Like when you play the Spider-Man playset, it should feel like something that would happen in a Spider-Man movie or a Spider-Man comic. You know, we collaborated closely with Brian Michael Bendis, who's one of the top writers at Marvel, on all of the stories and things for those playsets to ensure that they kind of have that feel. Now, in terms of the toy box, all we've done there is given players more refined toys and more of them so that their living room floor inspiration scenario can just get that much crazier and that they have that much more freedom and flexibility. So it's really now up to the player to make those experiences that they want to have.
Now, what does the inclusion of Marvel mean for the future of Disney Infinity? I mean, there's Disney characters, there's Marvel characters, but that's two huge universes of characters. Are you expecting it to keep snowballing and getting bigger as a franchise? Or?
Well, I sincerely hope so, as I enjoy working on Infinity. But yes, you know, all of our Infinity 1 characters, which were some Disney and some Pixar and other aspects of the Walt Disney Company's IP, those are all compatible with Infinity 2. So we can bring all those in and play with them, and you can see, well, who's the better superhero? Is it Mr. Incredible or is it Captain America? And we can compare and we can actually play those things out. And the continued snowballing of that mashup potential, I think, is very, very exciting. Yeah, it'll be, I mean, we'll have some decisions to make, I guess, but all in all, I would love to see where we can take this, what other characters we can put in, what other types of gameplay we can introduce.
If you could put anything in there from Disney or Marvel, just any one favorite character, who would it be?
Oh, man, that is a That's, I mean, you asked me my favorite superheroes. It's like asking me to pick my favorite child. You know what I mean? There are so many of them.
You can do that next.
A lot of my favorites, fortunately, did make it in the game. Venom is one I have a real soft spot for, have always really liked. Iron Man as well. I liked Iron Man before Iron Man was cool. You know what I mean? Like, I was an Iron Man fan before there were films. So a lot of them are here. I have a lot of kind of classic Disney properties that are awfully close to me. You know, as a kid, my very favorite film was the Robin Hood film with the fox. Robin Hood, which I really liked, and I think, you know, hey, guy with the bow and arrow, we can make him work. You know, I think we can come up with a way for
you've
him.
You've got
work
Hawkeye, to why not? Robin
we have
Hood?
Merida too. Hopefully we go there. I'm not confirming anything, and I've lobbied the people that I can to make things like that happen. But hopefully, we'll see something like that in the future.
Awesome, and John, thanks for talking to us.
Oh, thanks so much for coming to see us.
You just heard from Frank Sinatra, and that was Blue Moon, taken from the soundtrack to Fallout New Vegas. Before that, we heard from the producer of Disney Infinity 2.0, and that was thanks to Ben from 2RRR Big Head Mode.
They are Australia's second best gaming radio show.
That's obviously.
Right. Now, Alana, you just returned from Germany.
I did.
And that was for Gamescom.
Mm-hmm.
And very exciting.
It
right?
was massive.
So you got to play a whole bunch of games that haven't come out yet.
I did.
What's the best game you played?
I think Evolve. I don't know if I'll play it a lot when it actually comes out, but when I did play it for the several hours afterwards, I was just on such a high and I couldn't stop thinking about it and wanted to like return to playing it. It's fantastic.
So that's the one where you have four players who are hunting a monster who is also controlled by another player, right?
Yeah, correct. We played against some YouTuber called Vixter who has like nearly a million subscribers and totally beat him with
Ooh.
Three chicks on our team.
Nice.
So take that, Vixter.
Yeah.
I don't know who he is, to be honest. But so there's like a Goliath and a Kraken who've been announced so far, but there's going to be more monsters. And the game I enjoyed the most was against the Kraken, who is kind of like a mage. So it's like the Goliath is like a heavy, the Kraken is like a mage, and I feel like they're probably going to have like a thief, which would be like a stealthy hunter, which would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
And freaky.
Does the Kraken have tentacles?
Yeah, it's tentacly.
Good.
Not okay. as tentacly as it should be, but it is. But it can shoot like this orb thing from its chest and like blow you back, and they mess you up really bad. And most of what happens in the game, and the thing that makes it different from a boss fight, because I guess the whole thing does feel like a boss fight, like a co-op boss fight, is that the boss or that other player who is playing the monster can actually evade you really, really easily. So they just like try and run away so they can feed on the smaller little enemies that are around the map. And then they get health back, or they get their shield back, or they can like go into this cocoon thing, which makes them level up so that they evolve.
They get
and
bigger,
they are stronger.
Right?
Yeah, and bigger.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of panicking about keeping your eye on the monster all the time, which I didn't even realize was absent from boss fights until I played Evolve. I was like, in every single boss fight you play, you know exactly where the thing is and exactly what it's weak to and exactly what to do. It's just about spamming it and dodging at the right time. Whereas this one has like a whole other thing where you need to coordinate with everyone else, tell everyone else when you found it. There's actually like a ping system so that you can ping where it is. Mm-hmm. And try and make sure that you can keep your eye on it so it can't regenerate, which is, just super intense.
It's just the fact that it's a human being in control of that giant monster has to make it a lot more interesting too, right?
I suppose when I was playing it, that didn't ever really occur to me. Like, it could have not been,
yeah.
And I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, but you would have noticed, like, if a human wasn't controlling it, it probably would have just been hanging out trying to kill you. Probably.
Well, I'm sure they could have changed the AI to make it not do that. But,
yeah.
Like, while I was playing it, I wasn't like, this is another person. You're just completely oblivious to that and was just, like, yelling at my teammates pretty much the whole time. Because it's always really close. Like, the monster is a lot stronger than you are. And you have different classes. There's an assault, support, a trapper, and a medic.
Yep.
And I played the trapper in both of my games.
So you threw out the big net thing?
Yeah, it's like a big, I think they call it a biodome? I don't remember what they call it.
Yep.
But it's like a dome thing that traps it into an area so that you can't lose it.
Yeah.
And then you know where it is, and you can, like, take it down and put it back up. But I also had this, like, little dog thing called Daisy, which is actually called a trap jaw, that can track the monster as well, so you like follow that around, and that was like one of the things that my character had.
I didn't know that there was a dog thing.
It's yeah, I love it, actually. Pretty in love with the dog thing.
Right.
It so the way that we won the second game, the monster had no shield, was down to, I don't know, less than a quarter health, and less than a quarter of the last bar, that is. So, like, a 2% health.
Right.
Three of us died.
Yep.
There was one person left who was the medic.
Yep.
Medic died.
Oh, no.
Trapjaw was still alive, but the dropship comes every 2 minutes. So if you die, you respawn in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So when the medic died, there was 2 seconds left on the clock. And then we all respawned because the trapjaw was still there.
Oh.
Which none of us knew could happen. We were like, we lost this game. We just lost it. And he was on, like, no health and we lost. So then we respawned. He had, like, a tiny bit of his shield had regenerated and then took him out and won. It was crazy because you didn't think that that counted as a character, but so, that little dog thing totally does.
So the lesson is, if you're a monster, don't ignore the dog.
Yeah. Well, I would have too, though, because it doesn't seem like a hunter. Because it can't attack it, but it can revive you and it can, obviously respawn you if it's still alive, which was just crazy because he had no health and we all respawned in. Like, perfect timer. Like, if that timer had taken longer, we wouldn't have stood a chance because he would have just killed the trapjaw. Mm. But because it was 2 seconds, we made it. And yeah, it's totally overwhelming. I think because all of the weapons that you have are inherently tactical. Like, you have, like, the assault has, like, its little nuke things, and all these people have different weapons, and the healer's one is actually pretty cool. The medic's one is, like, a ray gun of health. So you just, like, see, like, this, like, green arc thing.
That's like the medic
you.
In Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like the medic in TF2. And, yeah, there's, like, one person who, I don't really know how it worked because I only played one class, but seemed to make me invisible every now and then, which was cool. It was, like, just suddenly invisible. So even if you didn't have a mic or you weren't playing with friends, I feel like the game would still work perfectly well because all of the actual weapons that you have are tactical. They're not just like assault rifle or shotgun or whatever. You do have those as well,
yeah.
But more than that.
But then you've got that other thing, though, where you, if you're teamed up with four random strangers and everyone kind of has to work together in order to defeat the monster, you could just have two guys who are so bad at it or who are just wanting to ruin your entire game.
You don't have to work that hard to work together. The only thing that I think would be really important is the ping system so that you can actually tell everyone where the monster is, and that just worked by like pressing RB on an Xbox One controller.
Right.
So if people didn't do that, it would be a problem.
Yeah.
But to be honest, in like every online game I play, I tend to get really annoyed at people not going for the objective. Mm. Like if there's an XP system in Evolve Online,
yeah.
I can imagine people running around and just killing the smaller enemies.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like if you play like a capture the flag kind of thing in any game, no one ever captures the goddamn flag and they just run around killing people.
Yeah.
I always play the objective.
Infuriating. Me too. Yeah. And then, like, I'll finish the match and have, like, the highest score, but we'll have someone trash-talking me because they had more kills than I did.
Yeah.
Like, but I had the most points. I don't understand. I won.
Yeah.
Having played as the Monster Hunter, are you now intrigued about going back and playing the game as the monster?
I'd love to try and play as the monster, yeah. I think it'd be really hard because you'd have to, like, watch where everyone is at all times, and they all have these, like, jetpacks as well so they can, like, fly across the map. I think that I would prefer to play as a hunter most of the time, but I do also wonder if I'd enjoy it half as much not playing it with friends.
I think it would just feel glorious to defeat four players. Like, it's 4-1 and I won.
I think majority of the time the monster's going to win.
Yeah?
It's so much stronger. It, like, almost feels unfair, but yeah, you'd have to, if you just, you know, utilized your weapons correctly, which I didn't in the first match, which we lost, then you'd probably be a lot better off. The Goliath just destroyed us.
Cool. We've just been talking about Evolve, which is by being made by Turtle Rock.
Turtle Rock. Yeah.
Guys who made Left 4 Dead. So that's awesome. What other games did you get a chance to play, Alana?
I played Sunset Overdrive, Dying Light, Sims 4, Halo 2 Anniversary, Forza Horizon 2, Ori and the Blind Forest. More things than I can list.
Cool. Well, we might talk to you about a few of those when we return after this track, which is by Alana Stone and Tripod, and this one's called Ivory Tower. Still talking with Alana about her Gamescom experience.
Mm.
Now, we've just heard about Evolve, which sounds freaking awesome.
Yeah, I love it.
And is coming out next year, February-ish?
Yeah, I don't think it has a release date yet.
Cool.
Yeah, February-ish.
What was your second favorite game that you played over there?
Project Spark. Actually.
Oh, cool.
Which is one that I did not list. Not that I enjoyed playing it, but just that I am amazed by it. I don't think that I will play it a lot. So Project Spark is, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a game where you can basically make other games. You just get this world and it's blank, and then you can, you know, put hills in it or grass or trees or a forest or a desert, whatever you really want to, and water. And then you can spawn like foxes or trolls or other people, and then you can give them AI, so you can like make them follow you or make them attack you or make them attack you when you attack them first, or put all these settings in that the way that it comes up, they call it code, and the way it comes up is that, like, when you click on that thing, it has when and then do. So you put in, like, when this happens, do this. So it'll, when player is near you, do walk in the other direction kind of thing. And you can change sort of the style of the game just from the menu really simply by making it like a first-person shooter or a side-scrolling platformer or an MMO. You can pretty much choose any of those settings and then it will change camera angles and gameplay and all that kind of stuff. And there are heaps of weapons as well. You can change how they work. You can fly if you want to. Pretty much any mechanic in the game you can change to make your own game. And yep. People have made like a lot of particularly really cool side-scrolling platformers is most of the stuff that I've seen on YouTube.
So it's kind of like a game engine creator or something like that?
Kind of. Yeah. Like, every game that you see is distinctly Project Spark. So you're like, that's obviously made on Project Spark. It's not, you don't get that much creativity because there's, I'm sure there's going to be expansions for this game, but there's like a set amount of creatures or whatever. But yeah, basically you get given the tools to create a game, like a map editor, but or a level creator, but you also get to mess with the AI of every single character that you can put in there.
I understand Microsoft initially wanted to build this so that it could be like a teaching tool for children.
It'd be a fantastic way to teach kids to code.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing.
Get them to think about the way that you program behaviors.
Yeah, yeah, it is really, really impressive. A lot of people originally likened it to like Minecraft or Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
But it's so much more than either of those. Different, so I wouldn't really compare them, but it's so much more that you can do. Yeah. So much more customizable. And like I said, I don't think I'm really going to play it. I love building stuff in Minecraft, but for some reason Project Spark doesn't feel as friendly. You can't just, you know, go and beat up some stuff and then make a house. You have to actually really think about everything that you do. Mm. But I think that I'm going to have an awesome time playing stuff that other people have made.
Yeah.
Because you could make like an MMO if you wanted, and there's this thing called level linking, so you could make like one map, and then when the map fills up, which I don't know exactly how big that is because it would depend on what you had in it, but it will eventually get too big, then you can create like a portal that will send you to another world, which could have a completely different gameplay style if you wanted. So you can make like a 12-hour game that would have like one level as an FPS and another level as a platformer and another level as like an action RPG or a brawler or a fighting game. And you can actually put your own story in as well, so you can like give the AI like, you can give them them basically personalities, and you can record dialogue with Kinect and animations with Kinect.
Yeah, I've seen how that works. That's amazing.
Yeah, like yeah. It sounds gimmicky, but it's actually so well done. It's yeah. Just it's fantastic.
So the animation thing looks at you as you're standing there, and then it recreates that in with the character with their skeleton, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's pretty much exact.
Yes.
It's just so, so impressive. I just can't even believe that they managed to make this seemingly limitless thing. And the stuff people are going to come up with is just going to be so cool.
When does that one come out?
That's also a good question. I think that might be next year as well. I'm yep. not sure. It's in beta at the moment, though.
Yeah, you can get it on the PC as well.
Actually, I kind of think it might be November. Yeah, Windows 8.
Yes.
Yeah, only on Windows 8. But I think you can also get it on Windows 8 tablets. And when cool. I asked if you could get, like, smart glass integration, because I feel like it would be a great game to play on a tablet, even if you had it, like, connected to your TV, the answer I got was like, we're thinking about it. So I was like, yes, that's totally a yes. But yeah. He didn't actually say yes. He was like, maybe. But I feel like that'd be a really, really cool way to play it, because the way that you expand things just feels like it'd make sense on a tablet. It's really cool.
So that was Project Spark. And just before we go, we've got about 2 minutes. What's another game that you enjoyed?
Other ones that stand out, I guess, Halo 2 Anniversary, which is exactly like Halo 2 in every single way. Except
that's
prettier.
Part of the Master Chief Collection that's
yes.
coming out, right?
Yeah. And we saw some of the Halo channel, and it teaches you kind of how you can just swap between every single thing you want in the Master Chief Collection. So you can play Halo 2 and then jump straight to watching one of the mini TV series things that they've got. What's the name of it? Forward Unto Dawn. You can just, like, in the same thing without ever having to go back to the dashboard or a main menu system, you can just swap between things so easy. It's all just, like, set out like a library. What else did I play? Ori and the Blind Forest was actually quite good. That's an action platformer, maybe? I wouldn't really know what genre it is, but kind of like Child of Light, which is just really pretty, really colourful, but still really kind of gloomy and creepy at the same time. Feels like a wonderland or a dream. And you've got like little things that attack you all over the place, and definitely not the same combat as Child of Light, which is sort of more like an RPG.
Yeah.
But or a JRPG. But yeah, Ori and the Blind Forest. What I played of it, I found it too simple, but I think that the later levels of that game are going to be really good. And the way that you can like jump across everything is really, really cool. It doesn't feel like any other platformer I've ever played. Oh. So I think that's going to be pretty great. And The Sims 4, played that as well. Initial thought of that was that it's very similar to the other ones, but then I went home and played The Sims 3 just out of curiosity to see how different it was, and the difference is actually colossal.
Oh, cool.
Like, when I played it, I was like, this is so similar that it's... what's the point?
Yeah.
But yeah, comparing them, like, almost side by side was massive difference. Like, everything is so much smoother and feels so much more polished, and the way that you can just, like, pull and drag a room and then all of your furniture will, like, move along with it, so you don't have to, like, manually replace everything.
Oh, wow.
It's like all of the tedious parts of the game have just been made cool. Instant. Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty great.
I think they're going to sell a bunch of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also have, like, a mouse and a headset, which I would absolutely never use because I really just like plain, I don't know, more... fancy stuff for my PC, but yeah. They like if you plug the mouse in while you're playing The Sims 4, it has like the little plumbob thing, which is the thing Sims get above their heads that changes colors,
yep.
And it will change color according to what your Sim's doing. It's like, that is the coolest thing ever.
That's the coolest and the dumbest integration.
If I weren't so serious business about my video gamesing, I would be all over that.
Nice.
So cool.
And The Sims 4 comes out pretty shortly, right? Next
September
month?
September 4th.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a couple of weeks away.
It is. So I hope I have a better PC by then.
Fantastic. Well, Alana, thank you very much for sharing your stories of Gamescom with us.
No worries.
We'll be back next week when we celebrate Radiothon, so make sure you tune in then. We're giving away a bunch of prizes. If you head to our Facebook, which is at facebook.com/thatgamesau, there'll be a comprehensive list of all the stuff that we're giving away, so go and check that out. But we will leave you now with the Halo Suite from Video Games Live, and this one is like a combination of all the Halo themes, so enjoy. We'll catch you guys next week.
Bye.